Our New Testament lesson today is Hebrews 13, 1 to 2. Let brotherly love continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. Please pray with me. Lord, may the words of my mouth and the listening ears of our hearts be acceptable in thy sight. O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. My niece was visiting New York City a few weeks ago, and I treated us to tickets to the musical Come From Away. It's the story of the town of Gander, Newfoundland, with a population just a little bigger than Pleasantville's, where 38 passenger jets and some 7,000 passengers were forced to land on 9/11 and stay for several days when the U.S. closed its airspace. It's the story of the extraordinary hospitality of the townsfolk to complete strangers, whose presence nearly doubled the town's population. Residents opened their restaurants, bars, schools, pharmacies, refusing to take any money. Welcome to Walmart. Would you like to come home for a shower? Was one of my favorite lines. Moreover, they couldn't understand what all the fuss was about. This is how we treat people. As terrific as the show was, I was more moved by the reaction of the theatergoers, a full house crowd. People leapt to their feet in a joyous standing ovation, and not just for the stellar performance of the cast and crew. There was a longing and a hunger there, I felt. This is how we once were, the best of humanity in the worst of times. And this is how we want us to be again. I have to think that a small group of Broadway showgoers aren't the only ones feeling that way today. Because here we are, with discord and bad behavior seemingly abounding everywhere. Our country now has a testy relationship with once strong allies. We've learned that foreign governments with fake social media sites have been stirring division among Americans, turning us against each other. A day doesn't go by without a politician, captain of industry, even religious leaders and/or their minions being arrested or fired or shamed for egregious acts. Tempers among us are hair trigger. It's hard to watch the TV news anymore, and I say this as a journalist. What's worse, disharmony feeds on itself. When we are afraid or fed up, it's a natural impulse to pull back, to retreat, to stay safe within our tribes who look and think just like we do. And of course, that only exacerbates the problem. Because when we become even more distanced from the other, from strangers, we continue to fear them. And fear is the root of hatred. Well, strangers, aliens, and how to treat them is one of the most pervasive themes in the Bible, in both the Old and the New Testament. Therefore, love the stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt, Gary just read out of Deuteronomy. The Bible makes it clear that our roots are as migrants and aliens. Abraham, the father of Christians, Muslims, and Jews, was a sojourner, called to leave everything familiar to him and move to Canaan, and then when famine occurred, to Egypt. When Hebrews, who are Abraham's descendants, became oppressed slaves in Egypt, God led them in the great Exodus out of Egypt and back to Canaan. But what does it really mean to love the stranger? Jesus' parable of the Good Samaritan is perhaps our most well-known example. We all know this story. On a treacherous road from Jerusalem to Jericho, a man had been beaten and left for dead by robbers. A priest and a Levite both passed the man by. Martin Luther King Jr., in his telling of this parable, speculated that they were afraid. Was this a ploy? Were robbers waiting in ambush? If I stop to help this man, what will happen to me? They wondered. The Good Samaritan, as we know, attended to the man's wounds, took him to safety, even paid an innkeeper to give him a place to stay. The Good Samaritan reframed the question, King says. If I do not stop to help this man, what will happen to him? Mother Teresa put it this way: when a poor person dies of hunger, it hasn't happened because God didn't take care of him or her. It happened because neither you nor I wanted to give that person what he or she needed. At our church, we are trying to practice radical hospitality, becoming a beacon to more strangers and sojourners in a number of different ways. We've spent time and money restoring the physical church, replacing stained glass windows, fixing water problems, installing AC and solar panels, keeping the grounds immaculately groomed. We want passersby to see that a group of people passionately love this place and that maybe they belong here too. We've offered events and activities that will draw people through our doors who otherwise wouldn't come inside our church. The Radical Beauty Photo Exhibit, Boy Scouts, AA, music lessons, a vibrant food ministry. Most important, I think, radical hospitality is about how we act in our day-to-day lives, how we treat people when we're away from the church. Because we are the church's ambassadors. We are the church. Individually, this would seem to have little impact. We're a smallish congregation of about 260. But let's do some math. If each of us had just 5 interactions with people a day, and I'm being conservative here, that's 1,300 interactions among us each day. Over a year, that's close to 500,000 interactions. Being an ambassador is a concept that Gail Zarek, who leads our Appalachia Service Project mission, tries to convey to the student and adult volunteers on that trip to West Virginia. You're not just you, she tells them. You represent the church and Pleasantville and New York and teenagers everywhere. When you act appropriately, there is a halo effect for all these groups. But when you don't, everyone gets a bad rap. So as ambassadors of this church, how do we deepen our interactions, practice more radical hospitality in our daily lives, become more like the folks in Gander, Newfoundland? My friend Andre Coleman offers a clue. Andre is a social worker who volunteers at Children's Village, a residential campus in Dobbs Ferry for young men who, for one reason or another, can't live with their families. Andre was the guest preacher one Sunday morning at Children's Village Chapel, where a large group of kids had been escorted from their dorms for the 9 a.m. service. He stood before them looking immaculate. "Gentlemen," he told them, "I woke up today very early to be with you this morning. I shined my shoes, I pressed my best shirt, I put on my suit and my favorite cufflinks, tied my tie just so, because I knew I was going to be speaking to the most important people in God's creation this morning, you." The kids looked around at each other a little quizzically. I doubt they had ever felt that or been told that before. And that got me thinking, what if we made a point of acting as if for everyone we came across, our 5 interactions a day, we were in the presence of the most important people God created on earth? There's a difference between being superficially nice and being really interested in someone else, taking time, listening, possibly helping. I was in the city on Friday, and ahead of me on the crowded sidewalk was an older woman with the worst case of osteoporosis I have ever seen. She was completely bent over at the waist and had trouble even raising her head to see where she was going. She had a cane in one hand and a big shopping bag in the other that she was more dragging than carrying. How excruciating. Now, Nice was giving this woman a wide berth and not making her feel that her snail's pace was holding everybody up behind her, which it was. And honestly, that's what I probably would have done had I been late to my appointment or weren't so intently focused on this topic this week. I'd like to say that God put this particular woman directly in my path to make me practice what I would be literally preaching about today. But there are people like this all over the place. I just hadn't been seeing them as the most important people God put on this earth. "How about if I carry that bag for you?" I asked her. She seemed surprised, but was more than happy to get the help. And now I know Sheila, a retired legal assistant. In journalism, when you are trying to establish rapport with someone and get them to talk to you, you try to notice the details. So, are they wearing a sports shirt? What did you think about the game last night? Who are those cute kids in the photo pinned to your cubicle? Hey, the name on your name tag, that's the name of my brother. Not fakey, but interested. Once you break the ice, there's no telling where your conversation might lead or just who you might be getting to know. The New Testament passage that I read, Paul's letter to the Hebrews, says, "Don't forget to entertain strangers, for thereby some may entertain angels unawares." Biblical scholars say he's referring to Abraham, who in Genesis was a wonderful host to three men who came upon his tent. One of them turned out to be God, and the other two were angels. My friend Andre would say that every stranger we meet is an angel, the most perfect being. I read this passage and say, you might never know how important and far-reaching an act of kindness might be. We in this congregation know what it feels like to be listened to and cared for and loved. When we're on the receiving end of someone going out of his or her way for us, we know what our impulse is to pay back the favor. It's called the reciprocity principle. In Gander, Newfoundland, for example, though residents refused to take money, passengers stuffed some $60,000 in the town's suggestion box as a small token of their appreciation and started a scholarship fund that now has amassed $1 million. Friendships struck during that tragedy are alive today. People's lives were transformed by that community's kindness. And that's just the people who were the direct recipients of that hospitality. What about bystanders who witness above and beyond behavior? They're inspired too. I know I was 17 years after the fact watching that show. I think back to a commercial several years ago called "A Helping Hand is Contagious." Bear with me. A woman stops a pizza delivery man from inadvertently walking into traffic. A guy who sees that helps a woman and her child off a bus. A man who sees that helps a shorter colleague get a box off a high shelf. A woman sees that and walking home stops a kid's basketball from rolling in the street. A guy driving by sees that and later helps grab someone's luggage off a turnstile. A window washer sees that and when he's at the laundromat, runs after the guy who left a sock in the dryer. A woman sees that and later gives her seat on the bus to a man and his young daughter. Another guy sees that and later moves a box so a man doesn't trip. A guy who sees that feeds the parking meter for a stranger. And a woman sees that. She's the woman who stops the pizza delivery guy from going into the street. A virtuous circle. In a world where big problems seem to emerge daily, little acts of kindness can seem silly, trivial, and beside the point. Indeed, there are times to march, to demand change, to call our congresspeople, and certainly to vote. But I have come to believe that Healing this country will need to come from the bottom up. From our 1,300 interactions a week, nearly 500,000 a year. Angels among us? Absolutely. Let's go meet them. Amen.